Welcome to this episode of MC Forward, a podcast that focuses on Montgomery College individuals who are leading from where they are. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Mills. Joining me today is Sharon Anthony, Chair of the English and Reading Department at the Germantown campus. Sharon, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
So I want to start off this conversation about leadership with my first memory of you when I joined Montgomery College about 12 years ago.
Okay.
And you were, I started in January, and I don't know if it was that January or the following fall, but it was football season, and your team had won. You came in a jersey. Okay.
That's right. A good day.
So it's an organization that is known for its lack of leadership, if you will. Talk to me about that, and how do you look at it from a leadership standpoint?
Well, it's funny. I think that, and I don't know the ins and outs of the business, but I can tell you from a fan, and I've been a fan for many years, is that from the spectator point of view, there seems to be a disconnect between what people are doing on the field and what the office, what the owners and the administration is planning on doing. And from a fan, sort of been through the highs, the few that there have been, and the many lows, I have felt that oftentimes, you know, winning on the field has not been the priority of the organization. And money making, commercial enterprises, those sorts of things have been more important. And I notice a lot of, you know, sponsoring organizations making money, but I don't see a lot of investment in the leadership of the team, like actual players, you know, and having them have an integral role in that. And that to me is so disappointing. And as you know, I grew up in Baltimore, and my entire family, including my wonderful son, huge Ravens fans. And of course, the Ravens are just such a well-managed, well-organized organization. They just have such good focus from the top down, and it shows in everything they do. And of course, my brother, who I'm very close to, is brutal. He's brutal because he just constantly points out the shortcomings of my team. So it's a little bit tough, but I like to say that, you know, it makes us tough fans. We've been through the low points and we're still hanging in there. So I think the fans have got grit. I wish that the organization on the Washington football team had the same amount of grit and focus.
But, and from a leadership standpoint, I think it points out the difference in organizations, right? No matter whether it's football, education, private business, if your leadership is not in touch with the rank and file, there's a huge disconnect there.
And it's really bad. And the negative effects just ripple throughout. And it's really felt. I mean, I have seen games, football games, where, you know, you can see that the fans and the team, they're just demoralized. Like, they just feel so down about themselves. And that's not a good thing for any organization. I don't see the same demoralization among the Ravens fans, because they know everybody's working towards the same goal. And I guess that's something, there's a disconnect with the Washington team. So, but I'm hanging in there. I have hope. Every year, I have hope.
Aside from football.
Yes.
Just what makes a good leader?
Well, I can tell you that based on my own experiences working with good leaders, and I've worked with many, actually. I've worked with some ineffective ones in other organizations, but I've worked at Montgomery College. I've been very lucky to work with excellent leaders and mentors here. And I really believe that the first thing is that a good leader listens. Like, they have to understand what people are doing, what the goals are, and where the problems are, and where the successes are. So you have to really be a good listener. And that is a skill that not many people have. It's easy to talk. It's easy to think that you're listening when you're really just getting ready to say something. And you're not really hearing what people are saying. The other quality I think is important in a good leader is flexibility. I'm a very organized person. I like structure. I like process. But I also know that I have to be able to pivot to meet like challenges. And of course, we know that with the COVID pandemic. I mean, we've had to be incredibly flexible in all aspects of our work. And meeting student needs just in the classroom, you've constantly got to be flexible. And I think that's really important in a leader, wherever your role of leadership is. And the last last thing I think is really important is humility. Like, I think a good leader has to say, I'm vulnerable in certain areas. I'm not perfect. I make mistakes and own up to them and then move on. And I think that that's really important to show that you're vulnerable, to show that you have humility, that you can laugh at yourself and that you can learn from the problems that arise. And I have been really lucky to work with people who have done all of those things and inspired me along the way. Even though they weren't always perfect, they were great leaders and are great leaders.
You've been at Montgomery College for about 20 years.
Yes.
How have your thoughts on leadership changed over that time?
Well, it's interesting because in teaching, it's a very solitary activity. So when you're teaching in a classroom, you are in your classroom, you're in your space, you organize everything. You don't really think too much on a day-to-day basis about all of the management that goes on outside of your classroom to make that possible. The curriculum decisions, the scheduling decisions, the support decisions, you don't really think about those things. And so as I slowly edged my way into broader and broader management leadership roles at the college, I've seen more of the policy decision making that I never even really thought about. I just figured, yeah, somebody made this somewhere, but I didn't realize all of the steps of the process, like the collaboration and getting feedback and making mistakes and asking for, you know, input and then making something better. And I've had a lot of respect because I always just thought that, you know, these things just evolved, you know, leadership just evolved. But what I've realized is they're people. Leaders are people. And they learn and they grow and they talk to lots of people, they take feedback and they make decisions based on so many factors. It's actually kind of dizzying at times. And I think just in my daily routine of going in my classroom at the beginning of my career, I just never appreciated that. I've also found that a true leader really is advocating for people. You're working with people. And the majority of my job as department chair is working with people. I mean, I talk to people and I listen all day long. And the actual paperwork and stuff is such a tiny bit of what I do. Most of the time, I'm just listening to people and helping them figure out ways of dealing with challenges. And I didn't really think about that. You think of, you know, somebody in a dean position just kind of making decisions. You know, you don't really think about all of the time they spend cultivating people, helping them develop and grow. People like me, you know, they helped me develop and grow. And you just kind of take it for granted, didn't know that's the really huge part of being a good leader.
Why are we so hesitant to allow leaders to make mistakes?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think it boils down to the leader, because I know in me, I was teaching. I love teaching. And my first leadership role, I mean, besides just being like a course coordinator, my first big college-wide role here at the college was working on the Gen Ed Committee. I was co-chair when we implemented that. And it was a very dynamic program, but it was vastly different than what we had in place. And there was a lot of anxiety among all of my colleagues. Far and wide about this. And for me, I was hesitant to step into that role at first because I knew it was going to test me. And I knew I was going to have to be strong and be able to handle challenge and conflict. And I wouldn't have all the answers right away because it was something brand new. And I think that as a leader, sometimes you feel like you have to be strong. You have to have the answers. You can't make mistakes. You can't have people, when people are disagreeing with you or in conflict with you, that's somehow negative. But it's not at all. It's all part of the process. And I had to learn in that role that conflict, disagreement is actually good because it points out where the problems are so that I could deal with them. But you have to kind of go through that layer. And I think when you look up to someone as being in charge of something, you know, we expect them to be good, to be perfect, to be 99% on it at all times. And so I think that's tough because no one can live up to that. they would be machines and not people.
And I don't think that means we have to embrace conflict or enjoy conflict, right?
Not
it just simply means that we have to understand how to deal with it as a leader because it's inevitable.
It is. And actually, sometimes it's good because when people disagree with me at first, I'm like, ugh, but I have to put that aside, the emotion aside, and go, you know, okay, let me listen to what this person is saying. And then sometimes when I listen to them, I find out, okay, the feelings are all tangled in there with their ideas. And once you can kind of let them kind of go through it, you can find out there sometimes is a very valid point underneath. And sometimes that's a good thing because then we can kind of say, hey, what can we do to move forward? One thing I've learned is you don't assess blame. You just kind of keep moving forward. how do we solve the problem? How do we address this? How can we bridge this problem? And sometimes the best things come out of those conversations, but it's hard because I think that we're hesitant to get into those difficult, tough conversations. We're hesitant. We want to look like we know what we're doing. And there's a lot of us involved in leadership and in our work. And it's hard to separate the personal from the task, but you have to, otherwise you drive yourself crazy.
But that's that humility that you talked about too. Admitting your own vulnerabilities and that you don't have all the answers.
Yeah, it's tough.
Do you enjoy it?
I like it. Yes, I do. I have found that it's not easy. It's not easy, but I enjoy it. And I think in the long run, I mean, I have days that are difficult because I have a lot of problems, challenges to deal with, mostly people, personnel issues, students complaining about something that is unfair. And then I have to kind of weed through it to find out, like, is there an actual problem here? What is it? How do we move forward? So sometimes those kinds of problems, they are exhausting. Number one, dealing with people and the anger and kind of being calm, you know, being the one who listens sometimes is hard, but I enjoy it because I think I've grown a lot from it. I think I'm a different person now than I was 10 years ago here. And I appreciate the people I work with who are just incredible experts and know so much. And one thing I've learned is that it's okay to ask for help, like to ask for support, ask for advice. And as a leader, you never think that their leaders are going to have to do that. Managers are going to do it, but you do, because that's how you get better. That's how you come up with the best solutions. And it's great. I work with two other English chairs at the different campuses, and we talk all the time. We are texting all the time. It is great because it helps us all like come up with ideas and make time calm and come up with solutions. It is really helpful, but I had to learn that it was okay to ask for help sometimes and just to have people to lean on. And so I love it actually, but it's not always easy. I can't imagine that your job is always easy either. I mean, you're really working at a top level and you've got so many things that you have to consider for every decision, every idea that you have. It's tough. I can imagine.
Well, it is tough. And I will tell you that I think the thing that helps me get through is mm-hmm. that while I take the work seriously, I don't take myself seriously.
Yes. I think that's right? The trick, really.
Because I have kids and grandkids who tell me, why are you so serious? Don't take yourself exactly. so serious, right? They keep me grounded in a sense.
I have two sons and they keep me very grounded. When I take myself too seriously, they're like, oh no. That's
so what
not
did
even
you learn? What did you learn as a faculty member mm-hmm. that you can take from a leadership standpoint to your role as chair?
Well, interestingly, when I'm in the classroom, I try to keep everybody like super actively involved. I think that's really the trick about learning anything, is you have to keep them hands-on. And one thing I found by doing that is I noticed that certain people have certain strengths. So I taught writing, or I teach writing. And so I would learn, okay, what is this person's strengths? What does this person have to work on? And I have them pull from their strength to have the most powerful message that they could. So I was kind of used to kind of digging into a person, kind of figuring out what they do well, because they're constantly practicing, constantly demonstrating in my classes. And then I would have them kind of work on that, enhance that, but at the same time, pull up their other skills as well. So one thing I've learned with working in any kind of leadership role, whether it was a gen ed program or the English department, is it's still people. So I try to figure out like, what are people's strengths? What are their interests? And then I try to give them opportunities to flourish. And I encourage them to try new things and to talk about what they're doing and what's not working, what is working. And I put a spotlight on their strengths and their successes. And I have conversations around things that we're all struggling with. And I guess that comes from teaching and managing my classroom the same exact way. And the other thing I've noticed is that sometimes you have to help people figure out, what do they want to do to improve? Like, where do they want to go? How do they want to grow? And I'm used to having those conversations with students, you know, what do you want to do? Like, where do you want to go from here? And now I find myself having similar conversations with the people I work with, you know, like, what do you see for yourself? Like, what are your interests? And then I nudge them into opportunities for fellowships or sabbaticals or courses and that sort of thing. Helping them write goals for their evaluations, the same kind of thing. So it's similar, although the content is different. It's still about people and growth and learning And that's one thing MC is so good at, because they give you so many opportunities here to try new things and to learn new things and to showcase what you've done. That's the beauty of it. That's the fun of life, is growing and trying new things. And I like to bring that into the department as well. The other thing I've done in this department is I try to make us feel like a unified group. So like in the classroom, I'm always building community, you know, like we have snacks and we have parties and we have, you know, just sometimes we just ask silly questions and we play games about educational information. And in the department, I'm trying to make it light. Like we have Wednesday lunches and we do, you know, at our department meetings, we have different people talking and we play bingo occasionally and stuff like that, just to kind of make us laugh together and talk together. So that's one thing I found that's important, because if not, you know, how do we make ourselves feel like a team and feel like we can rely on each other and support each other? So I think that's really important. And your whole program helps with that. I mean, everything you do kind of builds us and gives us opportunities to grow and to learn and to laugh and play with new ideas. And that's the beauty of it. That's the passion.
That segues me into a conversation that you categorized as a dance, and that's yes. scheduling, because that really is about working as a team, as a unit. How has scheduling classes challenged you as a leader?
It's interesting because I want to respect faculty needs and what they need to build their schedule. At the same time, I have a responsibility to students to make sure that the classes they need are offered when and how they need it. So sometimes I'll have people who have small children or they have, you know, other responsibilities outside of their work. And so they can only teach at certain times and they like to teach certain classes, but I don't schedule for them. I schedule for students. So what I've learned to do is I kind of do this dance kind of balance. So we make a schedule that works for student needs based on data collection from the past few years. And then what I do is I work individually with the professors and we try to figure out what kind of schedule do they want. I let them choose. I give them the schedule. What we do is we have a rotation. So it revolves every semester, you know, the top person goes to the bottom. And then individually, they look at the schedule and they pick the courses that they want to teach. And we have certain like guidelines. Can I teach one distance class to start with, blah, blah, blah. And then as we go along, once everybody picks their schedule, we do a second rotation, they can change things. But what I've learned is people want freedom to choose their own work schedule. And so I'm not going to tell them what it is. So, but I set up the big schedule and then I have the faculty pick the classes that they want. And that way they have control within a certain parameter. And then what happens is there's also the point of like when semester is beginning, we have certain classes that are empty. You know, we tend to hopefully not have too many, but we often have to add classes. And that's the real dance. Like, how much do you add? What do you think students need? When do they have to be? Like, what kind of format should they be in? And what day should they be structured, remote, virtual? Should they be? That is the real dance, because that information comes in the last second. And it's hard to figure out. So that takes, you know, data analysis. And that's just me looking at the numbers, looking at the wait list, begging people, you know, do you want to pick up another class? And we have to find teachers who are good at teaching certain courses or like teaching certain courses. So there's so many people issues and criteria there that you have to constantly consider. And that's the dance. And it happens fast. And that is something that for me, I like to think and be methodical, but I have to be flexible at that point. As soon as the semester starts, like 2 days before, it happens every semester. So that's why you got to sit down with the numbers. You got to watch the numbers on the computer as people are signing up for classes. And then what I try to do is I try to have people who I know want to teach classes who are ready to step into those roles. So it is a constant dance and a balance, because you don't want a class that's too empty, but you also don't want to have zero seats left in anything. So it's really hard. That has really taxed me, because I learned to watch the numbers fast and furiously and to make, you know, instantaneous decisions. But I have developed some shortcuts for that. Like I do know I have some people who want to pick up classes at the last minute. I have them ready and waiting and I slip them into that role. So I have done some of those kinds of preparations, I suppose, but still every semester it's different. For example, this semester, part of our classes were offered on campus. Many were remote. I thought students would be flocking back to campus and they were not. And so our classes were virtually empty here until the last minute. So, you know, we had to add a lot of virtual classes, and it just became like this last minute push. We had to hire people. We had to train them. So it's one of those things. You never know what people are going to want and when they're going to want it. It's just crazy. It really is. But it's interesting. And I have noticed some trends. I've worked with the other chairs to kind of identify some things and plan as best we can.
Well, what I love about what you were saying is that you're making these decisions not based on emotion, but based on the data.
Yes, absolutely. And we have students who will call and beg us, I need a seat, please add a class. But you know that you only have two students and it's a class of 25. You can't open a whole class for two students. So you find other places for those students to go. And so that's been a challenge because you want to help them. But sometimes we can help them, but it may not be their first choice. So luckily, sure. People are pretty flexible.
Thank you. This has been wonderful. It's been so exciting for me to see your enthusiasm and your growth. I really appreciate you taking the time out to join me.
Oh, thank you very much. I really enjoy talking with you as well. So thank you for inviting me.
If you know someone who you think would be a great fit for this podcast, have them reach out to me at michael.mills@montgomerycollege.edu. Meanwhile, keep moving MC forward.